Can you start by telling me about yourself and your experience with prisoner support?
My name is Cindy Crabb. I write the zine Doris, and I'm on Marius Mason's support team. I started doing, like, real basic prison support in the early 90s when I basically would send my zine free to prisoners and had a little bit of correspondence with prisoners that way. And then later on, I did Books to Prisoners in Asheville, North Carolina, and I do it in Ohio now a little bit. First of all, I started writing Marius after a mutual friend of ours had committed suicide, and I knew Marius would have one less pen pal, and so I started writing him, and after a couple of years, he asked me if I would join his support team. So that's how I got involved in more active prisoner support, was joining Marius's support team and trying to find out what wasn't happening, what needed to happen, how to get things more organized than they were, and facilitate Marius getting more support.
Can you speak to the importance of prisoner support as part of the Anarchist Project and other liberatory struggles, and specifically the necessity of supporting prisoners with long sentences?
Yeah. I think there's a few reasons why prisoner support is really essential, especially long-term prisoner support for the Anarchist Project. As anarchists, we often advocate for direct action, and if people get arrested for direct action, it's essential that we be there to support them. Otherwise, direct action isn't really a viable strategy. It's more just a martyristic or romanticized form of action. So in order for direct action to be sustainable and reasonable and an actual strategy, we need to be able to provide for prisoners who get arrested for their basic needs and bigger support, you know, to help them have the best life they can while they're in prison and to support their families outside of prison. Another reason I think prisoner support is really essential for anarchists is, as anarchists, we need to prefigure a world that we want to live in, and part of that prefiguration is being able to provide for people in our community that aren't able to provide for themselves. So if we live in a geographical community that we're connected to, we can do that through various kinds of support work of people that are in our communities, but a lot of anarchists don't have geographical communities that they live in, or they aren't connected to the community that they live in, and prisoner support can be a good practice in learning to set aside your own sort of agenda and learn to provide actual support and care to people that are not able to provide for themselves.
Can you tell us a little bit more about Marius?
So Marius Mason was an activist who was involved in various kinds of environmental activism and community activism since the 80s. He was a musician and a father and believed in collective organizing and direct action. In 2009, he was sentenced to 22 years in prison for an arson that he was charged with at a Michigan State University building. The building in Michigan that was burned down was doing genetic engineering. And this was in 1999, when genetic engineering wasn't really in the public consciousness of Americans. The animal liberation, earth liberation, and environmental projects were more focusing on logging and factory farming. In other countries, genetic engineering was more prevalent, more something that was really being protested against. So, say, in India, people were burning their GMO crops and setting themselves on fire in protest of Monsanto trying to patent seeds. So the arson at the Michigan building that Marius was convicted of, it really brought a lot of media attention to genetic engineering and really was successful in shifting the dialogue in America from genetic engineering being something that was just sort of like not really seen to Monsanto being researched, and I think Frontline even did a big expose on Monsanto after the arson. Marius was arrested in 2009 after his husband had turned state informant and gave the FBI a bunch of information about their actions. Unfortunately for Marius, his case was not really picked up by activist lawyers or the ACLU, who had picked up a few other cases like this that were coming down at the time. The FBI had started a campaign, which later became known as the Green Scare, which targeted environmental activists who were doing direct action and giving them extreme sentences to show to activists that these kinds of actions would be prosecuted to their furthest extent. The Green Scare scene is similar to the Red Scare, in which the FBI often just sent agents in to stir things up and then arrest people who went along with the agents. So Marius didn't have ACLU or an activist lawyer step forward to represent his case, basically probably because they thought it would be a losing case because his husband had turned state's evidence. So he had just a public defender, or a lawyer he had hired, actually. He took a plea deal. He pled guilty, thinking that under the assumption that he would get a reduced sentence, but instead he got excessive sentence. It was, I think, 20 years with a two-year terrorism enhancement. He was then placed in a prison in Minnesota, and about a month later was moved to the high security administrative unit in Texas Carswell. The administrative unit he was in for over 7 years, and it severely limited his ability to communicate with the outside world. It was a small unit that he was housed with, mostly people who had extreme behavioral problems or mental health problems. Since he's been in prison, he's refused to cut off ties with his friends and community on the outside, and he's also started a couple campaigns, one of which was the January 22nd International Day of Action in Solidarity with Trans Prisoners. He's also been writing poetry and teaching guitar inside the prison, and he took up painting and has been doing both paintings of animals, mostly animals that are at threat of extinction, and he's also been doing a Trans Heroes series of paintings.
Could you maybe briefly talk about him transitioning publicly?
Oh,
When that happened and how that went?
While he was in prison in 2014, Marius came out to his friends and family as transgender and now identifies as a man, and spent over 2 years fighting for the right to receive medically indicated care, and finally got approved for hormone treatment. So he's the first federal prisoner to get approved for hormone treatment, which will hopefully pave the way for other federal prisoners to be able to receive hormones. And he's currently fighting for the right to surgical care for gender transition.
So you mentioned Marius was recently released to general population after years in the admin unit. How did that come about, and what does it mean for him?
We're still trying to figure out how that came about and what it means. And we're still trying to figure out exactly what unit he's in. He was moved out of the admin unit. Like, the admin unit, and it stated, like, on the website, it states that it's there for behavioral problems and that there's people in there are supposed to receive, like, have a list of goals that if they meet, they can get moved out. And Marius has never, of course, gotten anything like that. His lawyer's been writing them a lot lately, trying to get them to abide by their own standards, and hasn't gotten any response. And then I think because Marius has... he gets mail and he's in the public eye a little bit and he's not forgotten, that there's a better chance for him to get moved out than some of the other prisoners who are in there who don't have communities of support. But it seems kind of random that he was moved out, and we're not totally sure why. We're not totally sure where he is, quite honestly. He's not quite in general population. I think he's in a little bit of a smaller wing, which might be actually better than general, sort of a better transition spot than general. It's hard to tell what's going on, so I don't want to like get it all. I don't want people to get confused by there being like multiple reports about what's going on. But whatever it is, it's way better than him being in the admin unit. He's able to go outside. He wrote us that he was like finally able to see the sky and the clouds after years and years of not even being able to see them, and that he can touch the trees and the yard and feel the wind, and that those things he'll never be able to take for granted again, that it just means so much that he can go outside. And in this new unit, he has more contact with other prisoners and more groups and activities, so it should be good. I mean, it would be better if he was free, but it's good that he's not in that unit anymore.
So you also mentioned that Marius has been advocating for himself as a trans prisoner and other trans prisoners. And one of the ways that he's done that is initiating January 22nd as the day of solidarity and day of action for trans prisoners. Can you talk about that initiative a little bit?
Yeah. He started that, he was communicating with someone in, I believe, in Australia about starting this day of action and solidarity with trans prisoners. He wanted to help expand the support he was getting to bring support to, like, the larger population of trans prisoners and connect the anarchist struggle with the trans prisoner struggle.
So when discussing prisoner support, we often think primarily of things like letter writing and fundraising and such, and often overlooked reality is that many people in prison are taken from their children or elderly parents or companion animals. And Marius in particular has a few cats who remain in the care of a comrade. What could we do to strengthen the support for the families and dependents of our prisoners?
I think there's so much that needs to be done to support prisoners across the board, individual prisoners and prisoners in general. I think, you know, before I joined Marius's support team, I thought that there was probably, that he was getting all the support he needed. You know, like I see his name around and, you know, would hear people talking about him. And so I was really shocked when I joined his support team that his basic needs weren't being met. You know, there wasn't enough fundraising and his amount of letters he was getting less and less as the years went by. So I think there's actually always that need for the basic stuff that we think is probably being taken care of, probably isn't being taken care of. But that being said, there's a number of good organizations that are trying to help support in this larger way that you're talking about. Like, how do we help prisoners who have kids who are left behind and aging parents? I don't know any work specifically about people helping with aging parents, but I know the Rosenberg Fund for Children has helped fly kids out to visit their parents in prison, political prisoners. They're at rfc.org. And then there's the Jericho Movement, which does a lot of support for political prisoners and their families. And Project Fang is a new fund that just started up that helps fly people out to visit prisoners. I think in the larger picture, sometimes when I'm so focused on just meeting the basic needs and just trying to figure out like why there isn't more support, it's hard to think about the bigger picture. But I think that really what people what would help would be if people realize that the basic needs of our prisoners, of our anarchist, long-term anarchist prisoners weren't being met, and they figured out sort of how much time they could put into it, whether it be like, you know, an hour a week or, you know, 2 hours a month or whatever kind of time frame. If people like actually sat down and were like, this is what I need to figure out, how to make something happen in a realistic way, and this is a realistic amount of time I can put forward into it, and then sort of look at their strengths, like what are they able to offer? Are they artists? Are they web designers? Can they organize fundraisers? Do they have some in with veterinarians? Like, can they do childcare? Sort of what are their strengths? What do they have to offer? And then think about what do they have? Is there something in their region? Like, is there a group in their region that's already doing prisoner support, that they can offer their services there. You know, I think it's important not just to get, I mean, while I'm an anarchist and I think the anarchist prisoners need our support, there's also a lot of other prisoners that need our support. You know, so if there's like a local organization that's working against ICE and immigration detention, or, you know, there was this cool thing on Mother's Day where people were raising money to get moms out who just needed bail, you know, and just like what's going on locally, or if they don't have a local area where anything's happening, then what can they contribute virtually? And I know with Marius, like we always have a need for fundraising and art and just getting the word out, everything, you know?
That transitions well into the next question, which is what are some of the challenges that we have in supporting prisoners, and what could we collectively be doing better?
I think the challenges are that it gets tiring. It gets tiring to ask people for money, and writing prisoners can be depressing, and these are two things that we need to just constantly be doing. You know, I don't have a ton of experience beyond Marius's case, and it could be different with other cases, but I've seen the sort of gendered delegation of tasks that I've seen in other anarchist movements sort of happening in the prisoner support, too, like where more women are doing the daily tasks of care that don't have as much glory to it, and more men are taking the more glorious media-type roles, which I find depressing. I think there's something really humbling about writing prisoners and being connected in that way, trying to find especially anarchist prisoners where you can't necessarily just write about what you're doing politically because it might probably won't get through, and where you actually have to like think about what else in your life matters and what else they might need to hear. Like most prisoners live in really sensory deprivation environments, and getting letters or art or contact that involves the senses is really important and kind of more important than hearing about some politic thing that you're thinking about, you know? And I think for a lot of anarchists, staying in the theoretical or staying in the, like, this is what I think politically realm is, like, a safer place to be than going to a place of, like, what else do I have to offer someone, you know? So, anyway, I think that more people need to be willing to do the sort of daily tasks of care and sort of let go of their egos a little bit and be like, yeah, I might not have anything, like, that's going to impress Marius, you know, to say in a letter. So I'm just going to write about, like, what I did with the walk I went on with my dog or something, you know? Like, honestly, you love the letters of, like, this is the walk I went on with my dog. And most prisoners I've written love those letters, you know? They want to remember, they start to forget what it's like to be in the world, you know? And remembering what it's like to just exist in the world is really helpful. So, yeah, letting go of the ego and just being willing to do the daily stuff, I think, is really, really important.
Can you speak to the way that the strengths or failings of prisoner support have affected Marius personally?
We try to shelter Marius a little bit from the financial situation, so that part hasn't really affected him personally. There's some things that he needs that don't happen that affect him. So, like, it's surprising to me, but, you know, he's vegan, and the meals in federal prison are not very vegan-friendly. And as a vegan, he had some serious health problems because the food was not sufficient to meet his nutritional needs. And so we've sent out some calls for people to see if anybody's willing to sort of spearhead, like, a advocacy project for federal prisons to, you know, have better vegan options. And there's been no response. And I know, like, we don't have very good outreach, but it's just sort of like, come on, people, like, you know, like, this is something very real. And I know there's, like, a ton of really active vegans out there, and this would be a good project, you know. And this is, like, really affecting Marius's health, like, in a severe way. So there's that. And then the less and less mail that he's been receiving in the last few years has been pretty disheartening for him. And I think just create more disconnection with the world. I mean, he's so understanding that there's people just don't write letters that much anymore, and that's just not the way that people communicate anymore, and he understands and everything. But the letters are like a super lifeline and a way to connect him with what it's like to be in the world, and honestly, to keep sane, you know? So I think people doing that more, you know, it's been a big one. And then fundraising, I mean, you know, his cats got sick, and we tried to do a separate fundraiser for the cat, so it wouldn't go from his, like, general fund, and it wasn't very successful, so I don't know, you know. I mean, we didn't tell him about the cat fundraiser, lack of funds for the cat fundraiser or anything, but I think there's just, like, it affects him, not the financial stuff, because he doesn't know about it, but the other stuff.
Can you see any ways that June 11th can contribute to addressing some of these shortcomings? And what are your hopes for June 11th this year?
I mean, I'm so grateful for June 11th. It is, like, one of the things. I think without June 11th, Marius's case would be really, would have really lost its visibility. And June 11th is so essential for keeping his case and other long-term anarchist prisoners' cases visible. I think the vision is what it is now. You know, a lot of different local groups doing events that speak to what's happening in their communities and that also draw attention to long-term anarchist prisoners. I think a larger vision could include a little more of like a toolbox to help new activists figure out ways to really get more involved in the anarchist movement and supporting anarchist prisoners, and could make some more connections to other prisoner movements just to bridge some of those gaps, or at least, you know, show solidarity. I think it's doing a good job. Yeah, just sometimes I think, like, it's kind of funny, but as anarchists, I don't think we're, like, immune to, like, the capitalist, like, grow or die mentality. And sometimes I feel like with our projects, we feel like, oh, what can we do next? Like, how can we up the ante, you know? And that sometimes just keeping a project alive is sufficient, you know? And of course, I want to see everything grow just as much as anybody else does. But I also think that maintaining things takes a ton of work, and that making things be constant and a constant in for people to get politicized around is a really huge asset.
Are there any struggles or moments in the recent past that have inspired you?
Yeah, I mean, the Black Lives Matter, of course, and some really cool work that, I can't remember the name now, but I can't remember if they were Dreamers or, you know, young people who had some kind of legal status in the United States, but did this, like, thing where they went into ICE prison. They got arrested on purpose into ICE prisons or holding centers, and did some, like, underground reporting and organizing on the inside, which was really brave and really amazing. There's a ton of immigrant rights stuff that's really powerful right now, really blowing my mind. And then the prison strike, of course, was and continues to be really inspiring and exciting.
Are there any other projects you're involved with or have interest in that you'd like to talk about?
I mean, I'm involved in the January 22nd Day of Action and Solidarity for Trans Prisoners, which I think is really exciting. I don't feel like it's, like, really fulfilled its potential yet in terms of its organizational structure, but I think just getting off the ground that there's a ton of interest in it, and it's, I think, a really beautiful way to broaden the picture of what we're doing and what we're able to do as anarchists and as queers. We definitely need more help organizing it. But it's also kind of just taken off in local autonomous groups, and sometimes that's, like, just as good as some better or some more organized form of organizing. I think the Trans Prisoner Day of Action and Solidarity is really taken off a lot internationally, which is cool. And I know I've seen this critique before, and I think it's a good critique, that as people in the United States, we need to do more work at being tuned in and supportive of anarchists and trans prisoners in other countries. So I personally am going to work on that a little bit more. over the next couple of years.